rise. Oi, oi, oi. All persons have finished before the Honorable United States Court of Appeal for Veterans Claim. Draw nigh and give your attention, for this Honorable Court is now in session. God save the United States and this Honorable Court. Please be seated.
Thank you. Good morning, I'm Judge Castle. To my right is Judge Hagel. To my left is Judge Scholin. We're here today in the matter of Johnson versus Shinseki, docket number 070987. With counsel for both parties, please note your appearance for the record.
Landon Overby for the appellant. Joining me at counsel's table is Jessica Cleary, also of Chisholm, Chisholm & Kilpatrick. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.
Your Honors, for the Secretary, Millicent Gomberts, and to the right of me, Kenneth Walsh.
Thank you. Are both parties ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you. Each party will have 30 minutes to present their respective arguments. Mr. Overby, do you wish to reserve a portion of your time for rebuttal?
With the court's permission, I'd like to reserve 10 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
You may be seated. Thank you. 10 minutes, you said?
Yes, Your Honor.
10 minutes it is.
Thank you
very much. You may begin.
May it please the court. Mr. Johnson asked that the court should reverse the board's interpretation of 38 CFR 3.303B as being legally erroneous. In this case, according to the board, it is prohibited from considering the veteran's low back complaint occurring during a second period of service, which was considered dishonorable, even though the condition actually began during his first period of service, which has been deemed honorable.
Where did the board say that? I'm having trouble. I think I see what you're trying to say, but point that out.
The board's decision at page 5 in the record on appeal, paragraph that begins, as noted above.
Yeah, I got it.
The board states, the board can only consider disability incurred or aggravated during his initial period of honorable service. Then they go on to state the SMRs during the honorable period of service document only one instance, and then they cite to 38 CFR 3.303B and the court's decision in Savage.
But where does that say they're not going to consider the other evidence?
Well, Your Honor, they don't specifically state that, but I think it can be implied from the failure to actually even consider.
Okay, go ahead.
So I believe that the board, by not even considering it, took it upon itself to believe that they could not consider the complaints that were during the second period of service, which was deemed dishonorable.
Well, it seems like they did consider it, but they considered it as negative evidence, because the very next paragraph from that which you just quoted says, the fact the veteran injured his back during service in January of 78 only provides evidence against this claim.
I understand that, Your Honor, and I believe that looking at it in context for the actual issue of chronicity, they didn't look at it in the second period of service to actually determine whether or not a chronic condition could be established, or even to the extent continuity of symptomatology. There's nothing in the law that prohibits the board from considering those second period complaints and determining whether or not a chronic condition is established or continuity of symptomatology. And I think the court's decision in Savage answered that clearly, that any post-service evidence can actually go to establish the fact that it's a chronic condition. But the board just didn't take those second period complaints and attribute them to. They just said these are two different periods of service, therefore we can't establish chronicity under 3.303B.
Excuse me a second.
Certainly, Your Honor.
I'm trying to get a feeling for 3.303B. And it's a little confusing to me, so I'd like to hear you explain. I'm going to ask the Secretary the same question.
Certainly.
As I see 3.303B, it has really two parts to it. One, the first part is a chronic condition. A chronic disease, not a chronic condition. Okay. Chronicity, as I see it in that regulation, is just the state of being a chronic disease. Has nothing to do with continuity of symptomatology, only to the extent that during the presumptive period, whatever it might be, a person can establish symptoms of the disease to the degree of 10%. Am I correct in that?
To 10%, I think, for the purpose of presumption, yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So, but that's how you, that's, it's for chronicity, right?
That is correct.
Okay. So, in this case, do we have a disease?
I believe we We do.
Is it one that's in the group of chronic diseases that's listed in 3.10?
I would suggest no, that it is not.
So if that's the case, chronicity does not apply in this case, or chronic condition, chronic disease. Am I correct about that?
If that were the case, that if the list were solely for the purposes of 3.307 and or 3.309 and the presumptive listed diseases, then I would submit that no, chronicity would not apply. But I don't think for the purposes of 3.303B, chronicity and diseases, that it's limited to the list under 3.309.
But that would be continuity of symptomatology, what you're talking about. In other words, any condition, whether it be a disease or a disability, an injury, because the basic statute says you can get disability compensation for either a disease or an injury, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, so the world for compensation purposes is divided into two realms, disease an injury.
Certainly, Your Honor.
Okay. Now, for proving service connection, we either have a disease here or an injury. What do we have?
We have an injury in this particular case.
Okay, so we have an injury. So, again, looking at the text of 3.303B, why doesn't the proof required fall into the level of, or into the paradigm of continuity of symptomatology, which, as I understand it, you have to show an incident in service has to be noted.
Noted, yes.
Right? And then you show continuity of symptoms, some symptoms, and then you have to have a medical opinion, or in some cases a lay opinion, that links the symptoms that they have to the incident in service.
Certainly.
Now, chronicity is a different thing, right?
It is. I believe it is a different thing.
So if we're dealing with an injury, what we're dealing with here is continuity of symptomatology. And the reason I asked that question is because, quite frankly, it was confusing to me, and probably still may still be, but that's the way I see it. And both the Secretary's brief and your oral argument refer at periods of time to chronicity. And I think that's confusing. And when we're trying to analyze this. Now, I'm not trying to lead you on, understand, but would you agree with me that what we're talking here is about continuity of symptomatology?
I believe so, Your Honor, and I think in the brief, the substitute opening brief that we did file, that we addressed it from both aspects, but the court supplemental order actually asked for the question about chronicity,
I will take full responsibility for that because I drafted that order.
Certainly.
And that's why I wanted to clarify this here because, quite frankly, I don't think I had it clear in my mind when I drafted the briefing order.
Well, I do think that this case really, I think to answer the question, a chronic condition can still be established.
There is no chronic condition.
Yes, that is correct, but just for the sake of the question posed by the order, I believe that a chronic condition can still be established during a dishonorable period of service so long as that something began during the first period.
Okay, but let me ask you, this is not what we call, I'm trying to get us here on the same page as far as terminology, okay? Because I think it's very important we don't mix analysis here.
Certainly.
Okay, so we have an injury. If I'm understanding your argument correctly, what you're saying is that paragraph that you cited in the board decision would indicate that the board did not look at the possible theory of granting service connection through continuity of symptomatology because they don't discuss it.
That is correct.
And matter of fact, they say, as I read that paragraph, that, look, we see that the individual had Mr. Johnson had an injury and it was noted in his first period of service. But they say for continuity of symptomatology, you have to show that he continues to have symptoms of that injury. So he had a back injury noted in the first period of service. And the board, as I understand your argument, says we can't consider anything he says about pain in my back that is favorable to him. during the second period of service to determine whether his now diagnosed back condition is related to the incident in service. Now, is that, do I understand your argument correctly?
That is the proper reading of our argument, that the continuity of symptomatology can be established even during that initial period of service. Assuming, for example, that he didn't have that initial injury during the first period of service, then I say no, continuity of symptomatology cannot go to establish service connection.
Thank you.
But again, we believe that the board in this particular case, 3.303B, going to continuity of symptomatology, it's when looking at the period of service that is deemed dishonorable, it's similar to a veteran just being discharged and maintaining the symptoms after discharge. So if he had only had one period of service of 2 years, immediately discharged, and continued to suffer the symptoms of the initial injury, then we'd be in the same situation. So there is no distinction whether or not it's a dishonorable period of service or it's just civilian service. And the board has misinterpreted the regulation by not considering the post-honorable service complaints that he had regarding his back condition, and he's testified to such. Even during a board hearing in 2004, testified that he had an initial injury in, I believe, 75 or 76, and continued to experience problems both during the initial period of service, the second period of service, and thereafter.
Looking at this from a purely factual standpoint, let's assume that we could look at the evidence during the second period of service. It seems that the board did seem to determine that if he had subsequent problems, that it was a new incident, and that there were, it was whatever problems he may subsequently have were subsequent to an intervening cause, not the 1977 decision. So even under the scenario, if we look at everything, does your client still win?
Well, I think, one, that the client still wins because the medical evidence relied on by the board, if you have two injuries, then it takes a medical expert to determine which injury, if at all possible. And as we've argued in our brief, we believe that the issue of the adequacy of the examination provided by VA whenever they rendered the opinion is not adequate.
When you say that the appellant wins, do you mean the appellant gets a remand to for the board to consider under the theory of continuity of symptomatology whether or not he's granted service connection, as opposed to reversal?
Not a reversal, Your Honor. I think it would be a vacate remand or set aside remand, and the proper remedy would be to remand the case back to the Board of Veterans Appeals, not only to, one, to consider the continuity of symptomatology, but two, make sure, for example, under the court's decision in Nieves-Rodriguez, that any examiner is properly informed, and the examiner seems to have been told when to render this a medical opinion in this case to only consider the honorable period of service. So right then and there, they haven't been provided the sufficient facts to make the actual.
But if you look at what the doctor said, he specified that he did look, I think it's the record at 417, he said that he looked at records from 75 to 77 and from 77 to 79. So he apparently didn't do what he was told, but he looked at everything.
The opinion, the comment that the examiner provides at record 418, did consider the records, but his focus was on the period of, and I'm not sure if this is a typo, vulnerable service, from 75 to February of 77, nor did the examiner consider anything about continuity of symptomatology. And this is a problem that we see again and again with VA examinations.
What about the statement on 418 that says, I feel his current back disability is not related to his period of vulnerable service from February 75 to February 77? Wouldn't that encompass?
I think it's a very conclusory statement, Your Honor. It doesn't provide any support, really. I know he states his x-ray changes are those of developmental abnormalities, but doesn't answer the question whether the injury in service could actually either been the cause of his current problems or even aggravated, because the examiner seems to focus on the fact that the veteran's condition was a congenital developmental abnormality. And again, that goes back to what we've argued in our brief about the adequacy of the examination.
Well, if it was that, and the board so found, the doctor then opined that his current condition is not related to that service. I'm having trouble understanding what is missing.
Well, in an opinion, to say that it's not due to, talks about the injury that he had in service, and he says, I feel it's not related to his period of vulnerable service, which still, it goes back to Judge Hagel's questioning dealing with the continuity of symptomatology. If a veteran or if an examiner is told, you must consider the fact that from 77 to this point, he's had a continuity of symptomatology. You can.
But where's the continuity of symptomatology?
The testimony that the board provided, not only in 2004, but also contemporaneous with his period of military service, where he had continuous low back complaints.
Where does he have continuous? I mean, I've looked at these medical records, and it seems to me he had one complaint while in his what I'll call the honorable service, and then he had an injury subsequent thereto in his other than honorable service, and the board concluded that that was a separate event and worked against his claim. And then you have a doctor saying the current disability that you have isn't related back, and that's based on his review of x-rays 77, 93, 99, 04. I'm having trouble understanding what it is that has this continuity that's been missed.
Well, what I'm referring to is that if an examiner is told the veteran had a continuity of symptoms, and we see this very frequently where they focus on the absence of treatment as opposed to continuity.
But wouldn't the examiner see that in the records? I mean, what is it the examiner is supposed to see?
I don't think so, Your Honor. Sometimes if records are missing and a veteran...
What evidence are you pointing to that shows a continuity?
The veteran's testimony that he provided to the
where?
Board in 2004.
2004.
Record 347 through 65. He testified that he had not experienced any problems with his back prior to military. That's at record 352. Suffered an injury to the back while on active duty. In the year, the injury was either 75 or 76, and that's at 352, 353. He's further testified that he sought treatment for his problems while on active duty. Then he testified that he continued to seek treatment for his problems after service, and that's at record 360.
Right, but it all ties into the day he was loading. It doesn't have a date on 353. Do you have the date? I mean, where's the continuity from the incident that he had in his honorable service to the day he injured himself in his other non-honorable service?
The continuity is his testimony that I...
Where is that testimony that says, from the day I injured myself on the honorable service, I continue to have pain every other day, etc., and then I also hurt myself on the truck?
I apologize.
It looks like he had pain one incident in service and was fine, re-upped, and then injured himself again later. And that's what the board seems to say.
Record 360, line 6.
360, line 6.
There's a question posed by the representative, I believe.
Okay, so we have a statement. I've been seeking medical all the time, you know. Now, we also have the medical records. So where in the medical records does it show that he's been seeking medical all the time? I mean, this is just a general statement from somebody answering questions.
He doesn't have to seek medical treatment, does he?
No, the regulation only requires a continuity of symptoms as opposed to treatment, and I believe that was addressed in the court's decision as Savage as well as Barr.
I'm not arguing that. I'm reading what you told me to read. I've been seeking medical all the time. Where is his statement that he's had pain and suffering and symptoms since the day he went to the sought medical treatment in the service, which is recorded, to subsequent? Where is it?
Your Honor, I think it can be read from the answer that he provides, that I've sought medical all the time for my condition.
But then you look at the medical and it's not there.
Well, the records will not be continuous to show.
Well, where's any one incident between the two?
That even the doctor from the CMP examination actually talks about 1999 records, earlier records.
But those are all 99. Where's the in other words, you have active good service. Where's the continuity between that and now this injury in the second less than honorable service? There doesn't seem to be any. If you can point to some, I'd like to see it.
Your Honor, I still would have to rely on the testimony offered by the veteran that it's continuity of symptoms as opposed to treatment. Because he mentions treatment, that necessarily implies that.
But does he mention he has those symptoms? I mean, is there a sentence in here where he says he had those?
It's not specifically in there, no, Your Honor.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Thank you. I'd like to shift gears ever so slightly and talk about the nature of his condition. Is it a defect or a disease?
I think I'm not a medical expert. I think it could be considered a defect. I'm not really sure about the pseudoarthrosis that he's been diagnosed with, if that's a disease itself as opposed to a defect. So I really, unfortunately, cannot answer that question.
Your time is up, but if you'd like to continue, you want to add it now?
Yeah, just one more question.
Okay, we'll add another minute.
Because it makes a difference as to whether his condition can be service-connected or not. Like, does he have something superimposed on it, or has it been aggravated? And that affects the way VA is to analyze his condition. So are you disputing the VA's determination that it's a defect, or are you okay with that?
I don't think I can, as a layperson, dispute it because I'm going off what the record tells us, but there was an injury in service that under the general counsel's precedent opinion, I believe it's 82-90, that said whenever there's a congenital disease or defect and there's a superimposed injury, then service connection can nonetheless be established.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. All right, you get to reset again. Ms. Gompertz?
Yes, Your Honor.
You have 30 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, it is the Secretary's position that the Court should affirm the Board's decision that denied Appellant's claim of entitlement to service connection for a low back. Basically, Your Honor, this is not a chronic disease case. This is a case in which we have one incident of low back pain in February 1977, and then we have, if you look at the record shows that in November of 1977, after the appellant re-enlisted in the service, he reported that he had no recurrent back pain, and his examination was normal. And then in January 1978, that was when appellant fell off the truck and he injured his back. Subsequent to that, you have a whole series of diagnoses related to that injury. So in this case, there's no evidence that the appellant's back pain complaint is the same as a disease. Note there was no diagnosis. If you look at 3.303B, there's no diagnosis of a disease. There's no indication that it was chronic. You don't have an association with this back pain as required under 3.303B. There's no association with a disease entity. And for this reason, it's our position that appellant is not entitled to service connection based on chronicity for his low back condition.
I'm going to ask, as I indicated the Secretary, the same question. You're talking in terms of chronicity.
Yes, Your Honor.
Do you agree or disagree with the fact that chronicity refers only to diseases?
Yes, Your Honor. It's our position, the Secretary's position, that chronicity relates to chronic disease.
Okay. So we're talking about an injury here, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Do you agree or disagree that during the time of service that's been characterized as dishonorable and subsequent to that, that Mr. Johnson reported that he had pain in his back, regardless of the cause?
Yes, Your Honor. The appellant did report that he had pain in his back subsequent to the January accident.
Under continuity of symptomatology, then, and the secretary has also, as I understand it from your brief, conceded that for purposes of continuity of symptomatology, that that period of dishonorable service can be considered.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Now, we do have different diagnoses, and we do have different injuries, intercurrent causes, or potential causes, let's say that. And I certainly agree with that, looking at the medical record. But who is to make the determination about whether those individual, the ultimate determination with regard to disability benefits, regarding whether or not those symptoms are related to the cause, either the intercurrent cause or the original cause in the first period of service? Who's ultimately supposed to make that determination? The doctor or the board or the adjudicator, I should say?
Your Honor, it's the adjudicator that makes that determination, considering the evidence, including the medical evidence that an appellant might submit in support of his claim.
Now, looking at the paragraph that the appellant's attorney cited, would you agree that that paragraph indicates that the board did not consider symptoms during the second period of service, which was characterized as dishonorable, because they believed they could not? Would you like me to restate that question? I may have been convoluted.
Pardon me, Your Honor, let me look at the decision, please.
It's on page 5, and let's look at it. I'll read the paragraph to you as you look at it, if you don't mind. Is my understanding is the one that the appellant's attorney cited. It's the third full paragraph down the page, and it says, as noted above, the board can only consider disability incurred or aggravated during his initial period of honorable service from 75 to 77. In this regard, the service medical records during his honorable period of service document only one incident of back pain, providing very negative evidence against a finding for chronic low back condition in this period of service. And there is, as I see in the board decision, no analysis from the terms of continuity of symptomatology for whether or not that injury in the first period of service was service-connected. Would you agree with that?
Your Honor, it appears in looking at the decision that the board did not address the second period of service for purposes of considering continuity of symptomatology.
Now, as I understand the Secretary's supplemental brief, your position is not that the board, your position is that we should care whether or not that the board made an error in that paragraph and their conduct, but rather because that was not argued before the board, we should not consider it under MAGIT. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
I shouldn't say MAGIT, probably not the right case, but that's your position.
Yes, that's
correct?
Our position, Your Honor.
So, okay, thank you. I just wanted to clarify that.
I'd like to follow up in response to Judge Hagel's questions. You noted that there was report of pain subsequent to the January accident. That January accident is the accident that occurred in his second service?
Yes, Your Honor.
Was there any report of continuing pain from the time he received care in his first service to the time of that accident?
Your Honor, the record only shows that there's only one back pain complaint as of February 1977, and then subsequent to that, and there's no evidence of any back pain. In fact, again, the appellant in his reported medical history checked off no recurrent back pain.
Thank you.
The medical examination that the board relied upon, it seems to me that the doctor did consider evidence from the dishonorable period of service, even though the conclusion paragraph doesn't actually reference that period of time. Is there some sort of problem with the board relying upon a medical exam that relied on evidence that it did not itself consider or think proper for it to consider?
Your Honor, we don't see that as a problem per se. He looked as a part of his instructions. He looked at the appellant's medical history, looked at everything. In terms of answering the question as to whether his condition was related to his qualifying period of service, Your Honor, the examiner did answer that question, so we don't see that as a problem per se.
Well, I'll leave it at that.
Just to follow up that, Judge Schoen's question would presume that the board did not consider the evidence, but I believe it was pointed out by either you or your opposing counsel,
yes,
or perhaps one of the judges, that the board itself did consider the evidence in the second tour of duty, specifically referring to the January accident and finding that that weighed against the claim, in fact. Page 4-5 of the record.
All right. Go back to that page. Your Honor, you're talking again about page 5 or page 4?
Just noting that the question presumed that the board did not consider the evidence in the second tour of duty, but in fact it did, as reflected on page 5.
Well, Your Honor, it did. Okay, I'm sorry.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay.
I'm fine.
Okay.
Any further questions?
Shifting gears again to the question of defect versus disease for congenital purposes. From what I can tell, the medical evidence doesn't say specifically that this is a congenital defect or a congenital disease that calls it an abnormality. The board determines that it's a defect. Is the board substituting its medical judgment, or does it have the authority to make that connection?
Well, Your Honor, if you look at the VA examination, there is a diagnosis for a congenital condition, and I believe that's at 418. Under 418, it says developmental abnormalities of the lumbar spine with spina bifida at L5-S1.
Right. Abnormality is the word
right.
That's used.
Yes.
Not disease, not defect, which are the two different types of buckets that VA has determined that a condition must fall into when it's congenital. So the board said it's an abnormality, therefore it's a defect.
Your Honor, not all, you can have a congenital disease, you can have
right.
a congenital defect. In this case, spina bifida is a congenital defect.
Is there medical evidence that says that it's a defect?
Well, I think that if you look at the definition for spina bifida in Dorland's, it indicates that it is, in fact, a defect, a congenital defect.
I have that. So bear with me a moment. So the board relies on a medical dictionary definition, or does it have its own authority, or does it have to rely on a medical report? That's my question.
You want to like to consult with?
Okay. Thank you.
Your Honor, I actually had the citation under Dorland's for spina bifida. I'm sure I'll be able to find it shortly, but this is a situation in which the board would have more than likely relied on a definition for spina bifida based on Dorland's or other medical dictionary.
Well, we'll leave it at that for now. Thank you.
Okay.
I have nothing further.
I have one other matter. Could you turn to the record of page 6?
Yes, sir. Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Would you please take a look at the third full paragraph on that page?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. I'll give you a moment to read it, and then we'll read it together, okay?
Okay.
Okay, the paragraph reads, the board emphasizes that the veteran's spina bifida has been diagnosed as a developmental abnormality, which is considered a congenital defect not subject to service connection. Okay, that's correct, I believe. As noted above, congenital or developmental defects are normally static conditions which are incapable of improvement or deterioration. Again, I agree. Hence, they are not subject to in-service incurrence, which I agree, or aggravation. Is that true? In other words, if you have a congenital defect, let's say spina bifida, which is a back problem, and you're injured in some way, can that condition not be aggravated?
Your Honor, the Secretary makes a distinction between a congenital disease and a congenital defect. In this case, we've got the condition of spina bifida occulta is the diagnosis, is the defect that appellant has been diagnosed with. In this case, we've got vertebrae, we actually have a hole in the back of the spine. It's our position that with respect to defects, defects are static conditions. In other words,
No, but I understand, though,
yeah.
But my sole question is whether that statement is correct about aggravation. Can spina bifida, because of some incident that happened in service, not related to the normal progress of that disease, can spina bifida be aggravated? Is this an incorrect statement here? You know, I don't know of any. You know, I'll tell you quite frankly, I don't know of any basis for that. I'm not saying it isn't. I'm just saying it doesn't seem right to me.
Your Honor, I think that is the board in this decision is referencing an OGC opinion that actually talks about the distinction between congenital diseases, the congenital defects, and in that case, they actually found that a particular congenital disease could have been aggravated, but it also talks about it. But that's not the case for defects. So we believe that is the correct answer.
I'm going to pick a bone with you here,
okay.
on that statement. Okay, the board emphasizes that the veteran's spina bifida has been diagnosed as a developmental abnormality, which is considered a congenital defect. So they found it a defect. They didn't find it a disease.
Right.
So, you know,
And I'd like to go back to sort of getting, I found the Dorland's dictionary definition of spina bifida.
Yes.
It's a developmental anomaly that is a kind of neural tube defect characterized by defective closure of the vertebral arch through which the spinal cord and meninges may protrude or may not. Dorland's defines defect as an imperfection, failure, or absence, and it defines abnormality as a malformation, deformity, or anomaly. Not exactly Dorland's doesn't say that spina bifida is a defect.
Yes, Your Honor, that's true, and you're right. But with regard to our what we have in our OGC opinion, we still do make a distinction between defects and diseases. And it's the Secretary's position the spina bifida occulta is a defect here. It's not a disease. It's not something that changes the state changes in any way.
Does the Secretary have a list somewhere of conditions it considers to be congenital diseases versus congenital defects?
No, Your Honor. We do not.
So the board makes this determination, or the regional office makes this determination, on a case-by-case basis?
Yes, Your Honor, it does. That's my understanding.
I'm not sure if I got an answer to my other question. It's quite all right. About whether or not a congenital defect, just under the law, not here, just generally, can be aggravated by an incident in service. Can it be aggravated? Just, I guess, it doesn't have to be in service or not. Can something aggravate that disease?
In answer to your question, Your Honor, can a condition, a defect, be aggravated? Not specifically related to this case, yes, Your Honor.
Okay. It could be. Then I guess that you would agree that the statement that the board made that the congenital condition is not subject to in-service aggravation is an error. Is that correct?
No, Your Honor. We're not saying that that's an error. I believe, and maybe I didn't understand your question. I thought we were asking about whether a defect could be aggravated.
That was my question.
General
just
sense.
Not here. I'm not talking about here.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, but in general, would you agree with that? I mean, I think you did before, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yes, Your Honor, but I need to change that insofar as the Secretary is concerned, a defect can't be aggravated for purpose of this case. A defect cannot be aggravated for purpose
of this
case.
And what is the basis for that? Is I know that, I mean, they cite a general counsel opinion here, but what is the basis upon which, and does the general counsel opinion specifically say that it can't be aggravated? It just doesn't seem logical to me. Now, I'm going to have to scrutinize that general counsel opinion. I agree. But I just wondered if you knew.
Well, Your Honor, Your Honor, with respect to the particular opinion that this is cited to, doesn't addresses the difference between congenital defects and congenital diseases, and actually addresses a situation in which you had aggravation of a congenital disease. So that's what it goes to. It talks about these things in general, and actually it doesn't even address a back pain type of congenital condition.
Okay, but it says it could be aggravated?
Actually, the finding for that was that a congenital disease could be aggravated, not a defect.
Okay, thank you.
Okay?
Sure. So
I hope I answered your question. Does that help?
It helps. Helps very much. And I will look at this opinion, you know, more closely. Thank you.
Okay.
I'm going to revisit with the appellant when he gets back up here that he's not arguing chronicity for sure. And in case he has not taken that off the table, I want to ask you a couple questions about the Secretary's position with regard to the evidence during the dishonorable period of service and chronicity.
Sure.
And the basis for the distinction that you made in your brief, that it would be something that could be looked at for continuity purposes, but not for chronicity purposes.
Yes, Your Honor.
Can you expand on that for me, please?
Yes, Your Honor. Well, if you look at 3.303B, it actually discusses in detail what's required to show that you have a chronic disease in service. So what it basically says is for showing a chronic disease, there is required a combination of manifestations sufficient to identify the disease entity. And in this case, we only have one back pain complaint in February 1977, and sufficient observation to establish chronicity at the time. Okay. So in order to establish chronicity in order to establish service connection based on chronicity, you would have had to have had all of these things together. It also says that, and you look at the actual regulation, it says that this rule does not mean that a manifestation of a joint pain, and it continues on and talks about other conditions, will permit service connection of arthritis, continues on, first shown as a clear-cut entity at some later date. So what the regulation clearly indicates is in order to establish chronic chronicity or a chronic disease, you need something more than just the fact that you have manifestations. You need something more. You have to actually have a combination of manifestations. You have to have a disease entity where you actually identify the disease, and then you have to have sufficient observation to establish chronicity at the time. And again, we're talking about in service. In this particular case, what we have is we have no chronic condition during the first period of service. We have one pain complaint. We have a gap of time through November. Then we don't have an identification of a disease entity, nor do we have a diagnosis associated with that back pain complaint in February 1977. At the end of that period of service, which was as of February 13, 1977, all we have is a back pain complaint.
You're saying all those things need to be in place by the day the guy leaves the service?
Yes, Your Honor.
There can't be through retroactive showing, through testimony, or some other kind of evidence that might relate back to that period of time, or time near that might be the day after the guy leaves the service, or 2 days after that.
Your Honor. The distinction is, again, there's a big difference between service connection based on chronicity, service connection based on continuity symptomatology. If, for example, if in this case we have an injury, but that is during the disqualifying period of service, in terms of relaying things, you know, there are lots of service connection claims where appellants file claims where they've been injured in service. We're not talking about this case, but they've been injured in service, and then or they have some subsequent diagnosis. All of those things are based on an injury, and it's based on service connection based on injury. When we're talking about chronicity, it's not the same thing, because we're talking about identification of a disease entity. There's identification of the types of chronic diseases we're talking about.
I think Judge Sholin's question was whether or not, after the individual left service, doctors could examine the entire facts that they had while he was in service and say that the individual did or did not have a specific chronic disease. You had stated that it had to be based on, at least it could have came across that perhaps it had to be based on the documents specifically saying that you had it at that time. But would you agree that a doctor could review this at a later time and say that it was a chronic disease?
No, Your Honor. Our reading of the regulation talks about identifying the disease entity and sufficient observation to establish chronicity at the time. And the time we're talking about is for showing of chronic disease in service.
That's correct. Couldn't a doctor review those records that existed at the time? Couldn't a doctor later review them and say, oh, yeah, that was chronic disease?
Your Honor, our position is, the answer to that question is no, that, again, the chronicity, for purpose of chronicity, the chronic disease has to be established in service. Okay?
Let's
go ahead.
Take that to be so.
And
I understand that there is a bar to benefits for conditions that are incurred during a dishonorable period of service. But if the condition started during his honorable period of service and subsequent manifestations occurred, let's just say for the sake of argument that they are related to the same disease entity during his second period of service, it's not clear to me that the bar to benefits in the second or in a dishonorable period of service for a injury or disease incurred in a dishonorable period of service would extend to subsequent manifestations of an injury or disease that did occur during honorable service. And that's the connection that I'm having difficulty making.
Okay, Your Honor. There's a distinction. We're talking about subsequent manifestations and looking at the regulation. What the regulation basically shows is once the disease has been found to be chronic in service, then any subsequent manifestations after that, no matter how remote a later date, are service-connected. But when we're talking about chronic disease, that chronic disease still has to be established at service.
Right, I understand that. And I don't understand is why evidence from the second period of service can't be used to establish a disease or injury that happened in the first period of service.
Okay, Your Honor, again, the reason for that is that...
If I had malaria in February of 77, but right now we only think it's a fever and it shows up five other times in 78, that doesn't make it that's when I got the malaria. I got it in 77. You know, and that's just an easier case to see than with a back injury. But so having difficulty.
Well, Your Honor, if you look at the regulation, it says manifestation for the same chronic disease at a later date, however remote or service-connected. So, for example, if we have a chronic disease that's established over here during service, during qualifying period of service, and instead of saying that we have a subsequent period of non-qualifying service, let's say that subsequent to that you have some other indication of malaria or something else. Provided that there isn't any intercurrent cause, this regulation indicates that service connection, that subsequent manifestations of the same chronic disease at a later date or service would be service connected unless they're attributable to an intercurrent cause. That's still different. The Secretary still sees a difference in treating the conditions differently between chronic disease and injury. So when you're talking about an injury, the etiology of that condition is when you first had the injury. So that the symptoms that he's complaining about, if you want to establish continuity symptomatology, as indicated in Savage, what you would be doing is you would be looking to see what do the symptoms show, what is the medical evidence from the time of the injury, to see if that is sufficient to show that there is service connection based on continuity symptomatology. So the emphasis, the difference there's a difference between the two conditions in terms of disease and injury.
I know your time's almost up. Judge Hagel had a question.
No, it's all right.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. The Secretary respectfully requests that the court affirm the February 2007 decision. Or decision.
Thank you. You have 10 minutes.
So Mr. Overby, were the last 5 minutes of my discussion with the Secretary a merely academic exercise, or are you also still arguing chronicity?
Well, Your Honor, while I was sitting down, I thought of a regulation that still does not really enlighten the question as to whether or not spina bifida is a disease defect. We just know, as what's been called by the VA physician, is that it's an abnormality. The board references in its decision at page 7 in the first half paragraph, the board seems to believe that Dr. Evans, who they're referring to as Dr. E, implies that spina bifida is a disease capable of aggravation. Now, I have looked at Dr. Evans' opinion. He doesn't say disease, but the board seems to believe that that's what the doctor's implying. But even more importantly, there's a regulation 38 CFR 3.814. It deals with spina bifida due to veterans who were exposed to Agent Orange. And nowhere in there does it define that spina bifida is a actual, in fact, defect. But what's interesting, if it was merely a defect and just normal and static, I would seem to believe that there would be no need that, and give you the specific subsection, or 3.814D, which deals with disability evaluations, 5, talks about a child going to a neurologist because they might have fecal incontinence or any other sort of neurological residuals. If it was merely a defect in normal and static, then I would suggest then there would be no neurological residuals. So, again, I I don't want to abandon the issue of chronicity if, in fact, spina bifida is, in fact, a disease. And I am no medical expert, and I don't think we can find an answer by using the medical dictionary nor the VA regulations, who had the opportunity when they created these regulations to identify a list of defects. They have not done so here. So it's hard for me to say that it's not a disease or a defect. With respect to the actual discussion on Savage and the question about whether or not post-service evidence can be used to establish chronicity, I think the court's already made that clear in Savage. They specifically posed that question in Savage to both parties, including the amici that responded, and the court found and held that, yes, not only can in-service evidence, but evidence relied on in the presumptive period, but also post-presumptive period evidence or post-service evidence can be used to establish chronicity. So I think the answer to the question is, even if in a dishonorable period of service, not only, as the Secretary has conceded, the continuity of symptomatology can be established, but also chronicity can be established post-service. And as for the Secretary's suggestion that the court should not consider the argument of continuity of symptomatology because Mr. Johnson purportedly has not raised that argument, I think the board had a legal obligation. I think this court's decisions, as well as the Federal Circuit's decisions, have stressed that, especially when you have a pro se appellant, that the board has a legal obligation to consider all theories of entitlement. I would hope that the court would not take the Secretary's invitation and decline to hear the argument under Majeed, because I think it's squarely within the court to
decide.
Where
is it reasonably raised?
I'm sorry?
Where in the record is it reasonably raised?
Well, I think as for the issue of 3.303B,
as for the issue of continuity of symptoms.
Well, I think when he's claiming service connection, Your Honor, that once he claims service connection for the actual disability, that under the Federal Circuit's decision in Schroeder, that they have to consider all theories of entitlement. And I think even that was made clear.
So you think the board should have a laundry list and just address every single possibility that ever existed, whether or not it's reasonably raised in the record?
I would think under the regulation, the direct regulation of 3.303, if the veteran is actually claiming in-service occurrence, I wouldn't see a need for them to consider the regulations dealing with 1151-type claims, because there are multiple ways to establish service connection.
Doesn't our case law generally say it's got to be reasonably raised?
I think, yes, Your Honor, and I think it's been reasonably raised by his claim of service connection.
So just a claim of service connection is a reasonably raised enough?
Certainly. I think they have to consider the regulations, otherwise, and they actually considered the regulation, although we believe they considered it erroneously because of the fact that, as you noted, Your Honor, that they did note the complaint from 78, but they didn't note it in the context of whether or not all of this can be continuity of symptomatology.
Why wouldn't you read this record and say they noticed the accident in 78, they noticed no complaints in between, and they determined that the accident in 78 was the cause in connection to his current disability when they looked at the doctor's medical records, which also said that there was no connection back? I mean, why isn't that a fair conclusion? And isn't that what they said?
They did say that the doctor rendered the opinion that it wasn't related to the injuries, but there's also the veteran's doctor who said it was aggravated by the veteran's injuries. So I think there's disputed evidence, and again, once with respect to the VA physician, as we argued in our opening brief, the physician never went to the point of aggravation. I can't.
You're assuming that a doctor is going to make a statement as broad as he did and totally ignore the fact that it could have been aggravated and therefore in some way connected, because that's a pretty broad statement saying it's not connected. Doesn't that cover it's not aggravated also?
I don't think so, Your Honor.
Okay.
I really believe that it's not covered.
In order for something to be raised, an issue to be raised, it doesn't have to be specifically identified by the veteran, does it?
No, the
can it not be raised by the record itself?
It can be raised by the record, but I believe in the very early days of this court, in the decision in Akles, the court made clear that a veteran does not have to assert the regulation or invoke the regulation at all costs. It's the paternalistic, non-adversarial nature of the system that requires the board and the VA regional office to consider regulations. If I were
a person, consider regulations, but to potentially apply. Just as you said, they wouldn't have to consider, in this case, an 1151 claim because there's no indication that, number one, that he says that I was injured in a VA hospital, and number two, the record doesn't have anything in here about his treatment in the VA hospital, in a VA facility, as being linked to this disability, correct?
That is correct.
So, but my question is can't the symptoms themselves that are contained in the record raise the issue?
Certainly.
Okay.
Certainly, Your Honor. I have nothing further, Your Honors, if there are any further questions, but I would just ask that the court reverse the board's erroneous interpretation of 38 CFR 3.303B, vacate the board's decision as to the issue of service connection, and ultimately remand for further instructions consistent with the proper application of 3.303B, as well as the other arguments made in our opening brief.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honors.
The case will be submitted.
We'll come down and
greet counsel.
It's adjourned to full notice.